everybody. Welcome to the Large Nerd Drawn Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is the incredibly patient Jonathan Strickland.
Yeah, I have to be incredibly patient because taking all those thumping noises out of the audio is really hard.
I'm trying to fix it, my friend. I didn't realize it was happening till just now.
Yeah, no, it's because it's very difficult to hear during the actual recording process. Like, I never notice it while we're recording. I only notice it when I'm editing, and I'm like, oh, something is, like, shifting and hitting a microphone or something. But, you know, that's just a peek behind the curtain to what it's like to produce podcasts, y'all.
All right, I think I fixed it, but if I haven't, yell at me, and I will fix it again.
Oh, no worries. No worries. This wasn't meant to be like calling. Listen, there have been most of the time what the noises I'm taking out are me sniffing. That's because I've had like a slight like low cold for like 2 months of everything else.
Fun fact. Last week, my husband was under the weather. We're guessing like a mild flu because he's vaccinated against the flu. Right. Mm. And I was like, oh, man, I dodged getting sick. And then this week. Like all weekend, we're both feeling fine. He was completely recovered. And then this week, I've been fighting a cold. So,
yeah, well, I mean, it happens. Like, and even with me, like, well, I would say that I don't get out much, but I've definitely been into a ton of doctor's offices recently. And I don't know. I guess it's weird. I never really thought about it, but it appears like doctor's offices, like, there's like a higher than average number of sick people in them. So,
something like that.
Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. What we're here to talk about is things what are geeky and that we love them.
Yes, and per usual, or at least usual post our last break, we're going to start with things that we've watched. And per my promise of last week, I did in fact watch Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you watched The Superb Owl.
I also watched The Superb Owl.
Well, what did you think about Spider-Man? Because I still need to watch that.
I really liked it. I felt highly inadequate that I couldn't recognize all of the references, but I've never been like a huge, like I liked Spider-Man, but I never like followed it hugely. So it's reasonable.
Well, yeah. And they introduced so many different variations of Spider-Man over the years that, I mean, if I were getting real like cynical, I'd be like, yeah, of course, because they were trying to make more money and it didn't really matter if it made sense from a story perspective or not. So I definitely wouldn't recognize all the variants because I've really only casually followed the Peter Parker Spider-Man story.
Well, and like every time I'm like, well, that surely was just made up for the movie. It wasn't. But it was really good because it started a little slow, I will say. Like, it started a little slow. There was a lot of, like, emotional setup, and it was still good. But when the movie picked up, it was fantastic. The villain ended up being quite scary to me, which I enjoyed. And I thought that Punk Spidey was going to be my favorite character, Hobie, but he wasn't. Pav was my favorite character, which was the...
Eastern Indian Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Yeah. The only reason I know that is because I play Marvel Puzzle Quest, and that version of Spider-Man was introduced as one of the characters you can collect, and I got him.
Just absolutely delightful. Just, but it was really well done. You know, the voice cast, as always, is amazing in that. I quite enjoyed it. The end was surprising and wonderful.
How did it stack up against the first one?
That's a hard question, because I can't really compare them. Again, I think it was a little bit the story. The scenes were not slower in the beginning, but the story was slower in the beginning, kind of. It took a while to really get a good momentum. It wasn't as new. It wasn't as new of a thing.
Right. Yeah. So the joy of discovery, you had already experienced that with the first one.
Yeah. But I think I liked it just as much.
That's cool. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm so pleased to hear it. Like I said, I still need to see it. And obviously, I'm sure most of our listeners have seen, like, saw this like months ago at this point. But I'm really looking forward to it. Maybe I'll actually give it a shot. I'm supposed to take a little bit of time off in another week or so. So maybe I can set some of that time aside for watching that, because it would, I've been looking forward to it. Instead, what I did was, you know, I had only watched the first episode of season 4 of True Detective until this week. And then I binged the other 4 episodes that are out now. The 6th episode comes out on the 18th. We're recording this on the 16th. So I have not had a chance to watch the final episode of season 4. And you know what? The things that I had issues with from the first episode, I still have issues with now, even though I went ahead and binged the other 4 episodes. But more so, like, I don't know if they're going to really finally say, yeah, there's some sort of the supernatural element here, or if they're going to attempt to kind of hand wave it away, which would seem really weird considering a lot of the stuff that has been unfolding in the series, or if they're just not going to bother to explain it at all, which is what I suspect they're going to do. And I feel will be the least satisfying, but I guess I'll see. There's actually a lot of stuff they need to wrap up in the 6th episode in order for it to have a satisfying conclusion, because there's the main mystery. It's actually a pair of mysteries that are at the heart of the story of the season, but then there are all these other subplots that they've introduced, and I question whether they can bring everything to a satisfying conclusion in a single episode and not have it feel rushed or artificial. I want to have enjoyed this season more than I have, but I consistently find it vexing.
I get that. And you know what? I think them ending with not explaining anything, if it is Lovecraft inspired, is accurate.
I mean, yeah, it's because like in the first season, there was this sort of supernatural a subtext at the very least in the first season, but you could walk away saying, all right, it had a lot of supernatural subtext, but nothing was overtly supernatural, and it totally could have taken place in a real world. You don't even need magic realism. You just need people who are delusional for one reason or another. Maybe they're mentally unwell. Maybe they have been drugged. Maybe they've been brainwashed, whatever it is, right? And this season, I feel like there are fewer ways to just kind of shrug it off and not explain it, unless you argue that, you know, it's set in Alaska and it's set in the winter when it's far enough north in Alaska where the sun sets and it stays dark for several weeks, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe your argument is, this is the psychological toll that takes on people when there's no sunlight for days on end. That may be what they go with, but I don't think it would be a very satisfying answer. It wouldn't satisfy me anyway. I don't know about the average viewer.
Yeah. Yeah. Is this the, have they announced whether they're planning on another season or if this is their final?
I haven't heard, but I wouldn't be surprised if they planned another one, because it's one of those things where it's a prestige title that gets a lot of attention. Most of the reviews I've seen for season 4 have been pretty positive. A few of them have taken the same issue that I have, which is that a lot of the stuff feels like it's filler or that it's a distraction and that it's purposefully holding back progress on the main mystery, because if they dedicated the entire attention to the main mystery, you'd be done in like 2.5 episodes. So they have to have all this extra stuff to pad it out a bit. But the problem is that the padding starts to kind of take center stage, and it's not as interesting as that central mystery is. And so you get frustrated, but that doesn't necessarily mean it'll prevent them from doing another show. And if it continues to get critical acclaim, then there are a lot of reasons to do another season. So I haven't heard anything about season 5, but I wouldn't be surprised about it. Whether they would do another one that was inspired by Chambers' work, I don't know, because this one feels like it's like the first season felt that it was heavily inspired by Chambers' work. This one feels like it's not as directly inspired by Chambers' work because they haven't referenced The King in Yellow or Carcosa or anything like that, but they have referenced the image of the spiral, which was first introduced in season one of True Detective. They've referenced that a ton in this season. So maybe they would go to another season where it ends up feeling more grounded, because that's what they did with seasons two and three.
Gotcha. And then, you know, I watched The Superb Owl.
Yes.
Jonathan did not, but watched a lot of commercials.
I did watch a lot of commercials, just because, I don't know. I don't do it the rest of the year, so.
Look, there's an art form to commercials, and a lot of times, maybe not for the Super Bowl commercials, but I know for like a lot of more like local ads, there's a lot of collaboration between the actors and the writers, which is kind of cool. Because they don't always have the big staff that like a TV show or a movie does. So I like the art form. I enjoy, but also apparently a lot of the Superb Owl commercials that I enjoyed, critics did not. So we will spare you that.
No, it's funny because Ariel was mentioning some of her favorites, and I was like, you know, according to this other article that I have access to, those are the same commercials that they did not like. And not to put shade on Ariel, but just like, I felt that the critics, because I didn't watch all of these commercials, but I felt like the critics who were specifically calling those out seemed to have like no sense of humor or joy, because some of the ones that I thought were genuinely funny were being flagged as, oh, this didn't work. Like the Michael Cera one for CeraVe moisturizer. I thought, one, it was a great send up of those styles of commercials in the 90s, like the Calvin Klein ads, that kind of stuff, you know, those obsession for men kind of ads where it was all very arty and vague, but also it was obviously Michael Cera poking fun at himself. And I just thought it was hilarious. And the ones I was looking at were like, nah, this didn't work at all. Like, are you dead inside? What happened?
Yeah. I mean, and some of them are dumb funny, but you know what? I like dumb funny commercials. If you can't make me chuckle or go, oh, that's clever, you're not going to grab me. Yeah, but a lot of the commercials that are worth talking about are trailers. So we will talk about them.
Yeah. Or they were trailers for trailers.
Yes, which we talked about this last year. It annoys me to no end, because if you're actually watching this game, which I do, mind you, the first half was boring, and after the halftime show, which was delightful, it picked up and was a really good game in the second half. But like, if I'm watching the game and I'm watching the commercials, I'm not going to leave. So I have to like get on my phone and make a note to go look at the commercial later, because I'm not going to leave. Like, DoorDash also did a sweepstakes where you could win everything that was advertised during the Super Bowl, which is a really cool thing, including like an Uber Eats gift card. I know this is not really dorky, but I find it cool. But you had to enter in this incredibly long URL, which meant you had to watch the commercial over and over or be like the best speed typer ever to enter. And I'm like, I started and I'm like, no, I gotta watch the game. So
yeah, that's how they get you.
That's how they get you.
Yeah, no, I find the trailers for a trailer to be really irritating. That's like a 9 on the irritating scale. The 10 for me is when you start a trailer on YouTube and it starts with like a 5-second like preview for the trailer you're already about to watch. Uh-huh. That's the worst. Stop doing it. If it's like a pivotal moment in the trailer that's going to be a wow moment, don't show me at the beginning. I want to see it as it unfolds in the trailer. That's irritating. Stop it.
Yeah. The trailers for trailers are on a trailer in YouTube as a commercial are frustrating, we've talked about before. I'm not anti-commercial because if you don't want to pay extra price for your media, that's how they can afford to still make it. But man, when I turn on a short 4-minute YouTube video lately, and then I have to watch 4 minutes of commercial to get to the YouTube video, it's frustrating.
Yeah, it's so like I'm subscribed to the YouTube, so I pay, because I was subscribing to a different service. It got ported over to YouTube, which means I don't get commercials on YouTube unless I seek them out. So I don't experience that. But it's funny because when I watch a long form video where there are pauses that have been inserted in, I'm like, oh, this is where commercials would have gone if I, if I had not subscribed to YouTube. Otherwise I'm unaware of it. So I don't encounter that, but I can totally see how that can be frustrating. It's kind of similar to how on the web, when pop-ups started to become a thing, and those were incredibly obnoxious, especially pop-ups that would automatically start playing audio or video. And you'd have to like hunt around to be able to close them out. The worst, or the ones that still happen where you'll go to a website and you start to try and read something, and the top margin suddenly scrolls down and covers like 3/4 of the screen. Stop, stop. Yeah. You're just making us resent whatever it is you're advertising. It doesn't work.
Especially if you can't then close it. Now, I will say, like, front-loading the ads works on longer YouTube videos. So, like, let's say I'm watching a Critical Role or Dimension 20 or whatever. Well, I don't watch Dimension 20 on YouTube anymore, but when I did. It does work better for that, because then I can watch all the commercials at the beginning and get an uninterrupted stream.
Yeah.
But, or a less interrupted stream. But on short videos, it doesn't quite work as well.
We could talk at length at YouTube's various advertising strategies, but we've got it looks to me, based upon my estimation, a buttload of stuff to talk about.
Yes, and not a buttload of time.
So I think it's time for us to move to our favorite segment and yours. I don't know if that's true, but it's 30 seconds or less.
Woo!
And I'm first. So here we go. You can't keep a good pair of charlatans down. We're getting another and presumably final film in the Conjuring series. Michael Chavez, who has directed movies in that universe already, is in talks to direct. David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick wrote the screenplay once he finally finished writing his incredibly long name on the contract. It starts shooting in Atlanta this summer, so maybe we'll see Ariel as a ghost.
That would be awesome. Tomb Raider 1-3 has been remastered. If you wanted to play those lovely polygonal games, but in the remastering, the gaming company Crystal Dynamics has decided to not take out the harmful stereotypes that were put into the first three great games, and rather add a disclaimer at the beginning, which says, rather than removing the content, we have chosen to present it here in its original form, unaltered, in the hopes that we may acknowledge its harmful impact and learn from it. I personally, I understand if they don't want to change the game that much, but at the same time, when you're playing the game, you're probably not necessarily learning from it unless they put subtitles like, this is harmful, this is why it's harmful, as you're playing.
Maybe, but I mean, Disney does the same thing for some of their cartoon content that has not just cartoon content, but some of their stuff that was made specifically like in the 1950s and 1960s,
and like the Muppets and stuff.
Yeah, and the Muppets in the 70s and 80s, where there's been some stuff that in our modern approach to media we would recognize as being harmful and should not have happened at that time. I don't know. I have feelings about this. I think it's responsible if you acknowledge it and you allow people to still make the decision as to whether or not they consume that media. But to your point, I do understand, like, when it's happening, it's not like you can have a deeper discussion about why was this wrong then and what have we learned since, and what would be, you know, the appropriate thing to do.
I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe a middle ground would be if there is like a specific stereotype or injustice that is shown, to put a little blurb about that with a learn more here click, either at the beginning or at the end.
That's true. In games, you can do that kind of thing. So that is a possibility. Yeah. All right. I apologize. I derailed it this time. Here we go. So in last week's episode, I mentioned that David Leitch had been tapped to direct a new Jurassic World movie, and now he's been untapped. So reportedly, there was a difference in vision between Leitch and Universal. As a reminder, this new entry in Jurassic World is said to be an entirely new take, which suggests we will not have returning characters show up trying to prevent the military from weaponizing dinosaurs, which is good, because that was dumb.
I wonder if there are not going to be returning dinosaurs in it.
Yeah, no, it'll be Jurassic World, but no dinosaurs. It's just the flora, none of the fauna. It's just the plants.
Well, it could be like all woolly mammoths.
No, that's Jurassic's too early for woolly mammoths, though.
Oh, yeah. Jurassic Park, no longer Jurassic.
Well, to be fair, like half the dinosaurs, more than half of the ones that appeared actually came from like the Cretaceous period, not the Jurassic period. But that's an argument for a different time.
Yes, I derailed it this time. Okay, next, Disney has released art for and a premiere date for their original series, Renegade Mel, which is about a young woman who finds herself framed for murder and becomes an outlaw in 18th century England, and then, you know, makes friends with impish characters and life gets crazy from there. No trailers yet. It looks delightful. It comes out on March 29th. This is something I'm looking for. Also, the artwork on the poster, the girl looks vaguely like our friend Shay to me. So,
friend of the show, Shay. All right.
The show, Shay. She's legally changed her name.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Dan Trachtenberg, who directed Prey, is in talks to direct a new Predator film called Badlands. This one is not connected to Prey, but it is supposed to have a woman take on the lead role, and it's also supposed to take place in the future. So apparently, Prey really reinvigorated the franchise because now there are rumors of multiple Predator projects that are in early development. So could we get a Predator cinematic universe? Please no.
Yeah, the second movie is going to be called Eat. And then the last one's a love story.
Love, yeah. I love that. Predators Eat, Prey, Love trilogy.
It's Prey, Eat, Love. It's anyhow. Okay. Lastly, in our 30 seconds or less, there is a John Wick experience coming to Area 15 in Las Vegas, which is right next to a Mega Mart, which Jonathan and I have talked about before because it's super cool, and friend of the show, Shay, is also visiting.
Yeah, she went there yesterday.
Yeah. I always say that because Jonathan told me yesterday. It's going to be kind of, it sounds like it's going to be like a mix between like the Stranger Things interactive experience and a murder mystery, because or where you get like assigned a character and you go in and you interact with the other characters and go on missions or something like that, or like the Spy Museum or something like that. It sounds pretty cool. Hopefully you won't have to, you know, shoot anybody in the face.
Yeah, I think the setting is supposed to be the Continental, which is the hotel that is featured heavily in the various John Wick films. And I guess by the end of it, you too will be convinced that absolutely every single person who coexists in the world with you is also a highly skilled, highly trained assassin.
That's the best way to live life.
The John Wick series just is absolutely ridiculous. I love the action, but I'm like, how does the economy of this world work? Because apparently everybody is a trained killer.
Yep. Gotta send in those body count tokens.
Yep.
To do your laundry. Now we're on to our regular news, and we're going to start with a very sad story.
Yeah.
Very sad story.
Tragic story. It's actually personally tragic. It has ripped a hole in Ariel's heart, because while she is Miss Thing, she is not the thing.
Yeah. The Fantastic Four casting has been announced, and I am not in it. I didn't even get an audition, but honestly, I'm okay with that. I like the lineup. Eben Mossbacher is slid through his name because I couldn't pronounce it correctly with my cold, is the thing, which we kind of talked about was a rumor last week. Joseph Quinn, who was Eddie in the season 3 of Stranger Things, is Johnny Storm. Pedro Pascal is Mr. Fantastic. And then
Vanessa Kirby.
Vanessa Kirby is Sue Storm, who I'm not as familiar with. I haven't seen the stuff that she's been in, but I'm sure she'll be great.
Yeah.
I'm actually quite excited about the casting.
One of our friends, or one of my friends anyway, commented, I saw it on the Book of Faces, that that he was not super jazzed to hear about Pedro Pascal because he said he's overexposed to me. And I said, would you say he was stretched thin? Because then it's typecasting.
My only thing that would keep me from thinking Pedro Pascal is totally something that I don't want put on me as an actor, which is that his body type doesn't scream Mr. Fantastic to me. He's kind of more built.
For me, it's also the fact that we've already seen Mr. Fantastic as John Krasinski. And you know, you could argue, yeah, but that was a multiverse thing, right? Like that was a different universe within the multiverse. And in that universe, he is Reed Richards. But I would argue, maybe, but why are the other characters played by the same actors? Where it's like the variations of the different like characters, but they're played like Captain Carter is still played by Atwell. So like, I don't get it.
I mean, so it could be that John Krasinski didn't have time or didn't want to be Mr. Fantastic, you know, Mr. Fantastic. All of a sudden my brain just shorted out there.
Yeah.
Full time. And I know that which I would expect more in earlier days of the MCU when they were putting people into these very long contracts, right?
Yeah.
Which we had talked about earlier that they aren't doing as much. You know, there's a myriad of reasons that he could not be doing it. It could be that they want a fresh start. It could be that he went through a radiation field and got darker and gruffer. but that being said, Pedro Pascal has such a vast range of goofy to serious that I think he will do well in acting the role.
Oh, I agree. I think he'll do a good job. It's no shade on Pedro Pascal. I really like his work. I mean, I've seen him perform on stage. Didn't even know it was him at the time.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, he was in King Lear. And I really like his work. I enjoy his projects. But it's just one of those things where it just kind of irks me where they've already established an actor in a role. But then also, I got to get over myself. Marvel has recast roles multiple times. So it's not like I should really be upset about it. Like they've done this in the past mm-hmm. already. And so, yeah, I'll get over it. I'm sure what I'm really excited about is that we're finally going to get a Fantastic Four film. My hope is that we'll see a lot more care given to crafting this film so that it's an entertaining story. And I don't know why I'm hoping this considering the nature of the Fantastic Four's powers, but I'm really hoping it doesn't ultimately lead to a giant like PS3 computer generated, yeah. you know, spectacle at the end where you don't feel anything because nothing feels grounded or real.
Yeah, I hope so too. And to your Marvel recasting thing, Marvel also used to say that if you played one character in the MCU, you couldn't play another. This is another example of that being changed because Eben Moss-Bachrach has played Microchip in The Punisher, so which is now technically a part of the MCU.
Oh, so the Netflix series, The Punisher, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Not like one of the terrible film versions that were done before the Netflix series.
No.
Which
no,
they don't count in the MCU. They were like, it's kind of like the old Captain America movies and stuff like that. That's before the MCU era.
You say that, but I feel like nothing is off limits.
I feel like you could see a reference to it occasionally. Either sometimes I wonder if they are referencing very old Marvel film moments, because there was one where it was Henry Salinger's kid. I can't remember his name, but he played Captain America. And the gag that I remember is that he would fake illness in order to get to draw people away from a car so that he could then run to the car and steal the car and drive off. And he does it like twice in the movie. And it's ridiculous. And I want to say that in Captain America Winter Soldier, there's a scene where he does that. And I was sitting there thinking, like, is this just coincidence, or are they actually kind of tongue in cheek referencing this almost forgotten about Captain America movie?
I bet it was purposeful. But you know, the X-Men, I think when they start, like the X-Men movies started pre MCU, and those are being pulled in to the MCU now. So
we even got references. I remember in the first, way back in the first X-Men film, not even before the Days of Future Past stuff, when you get to the first X-Men film, they referenced the cartoon series, which we will chat about toward the end of this episode. Mm-hmm. But they referenced the, because they had one of the characters from the cartoon series who was not in the comic books, in order to have a character that they could very quickly kill off.
But speaking of X-Men meshing with MCU and all kinds of things being brought in, we did get a trailer for the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer during Super Bowl, which means we actually got a Deadpool and Wolverine trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought this, I mean, it was interesting. They pull in the Time Variant Authority, the TVA, that we saw in the Loki series. So they appear to have a big part in this, and it seems like at least part of the reason is because Deadpool does have this ability to break the fourth wall, which makes him not unique, because She-Hulk also does it, but unusual. And so for one reason or another, the TVA has decided to visit Deadpool. Maybe it's because of the way Deadpool 2 ends, which it has a little bit of time traveling shenanigans in it. That might be why, but yeah, I'm,
cause that would possibly cause branches. So
yeah, absolutely. So maybe that's going to be the thing. I still haven't seen Loki season 2. I really need to, cause I want to see how that TVA storyline progresses.
There are references to the end of the series. I don't remember if it's in the Deadpool trailer, but in something that I saw recently. So it's a little slow. There are some episodes that are really good. There are some bits that are really good. I feel like Kang's character in season 2 talks so slow that I get why he did it, but I desperately wanted him to finish a sentence quicker.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, he finished his career with MCU.
I mean, you know what? I'm going to say that doesn't actually make me feel better. I wish that he hadn't done the things that he did so that he could still have a career, because I don't like seeing anybody fail.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, what did you think of the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer? What was your reaction?
I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. I liked how self-referential it was. I was honestly surprised by how much of the Disney MCU was pulled into it, though I shouldn't have been. And there was one like very brief cameo appearance that I asked my husband, I was like, is that? And my husband's like, I don't think so, but it was. And I was right.
I mean, I don't want to doom this conversation, but was it a doctor of certain malevolent renown?
Yes. Yes.
I was wondering if that was Dr. Doom when I saw the image of the armored masked man in a cowl. And I thought, that doesn't look like Dr. Doom's mask, but this being a multiversal kind of movie, that totally could be a Dr. Doom.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I don't know for certain, obviously, but like some of our mutual friends who watch a lot of movies also are postulizing that. So
yeah. Well, and here's the nice thing is that they could totally, well, first of all, you would expect a Dr. Doom to be pulled into the MCU at some point, because we are getting a Fantastic Four movie, and that Dr. Doom is traditionally their biggest villain that they face off against. But also, like, Dr. Doom would not be a bad shout if you wanted to either segue away from Kang or just have something to supplement Kang so that it takes a little of the sting out, because My guess is they're going to just do a full recasting, and that's, and Kang is still going to be the big bad for the end of this phase, or the end of these phases, because otherwise they have to completely go back to the drawing board.
Yeah, I've heard recasting rumors. I hope that either in Deadpool or the new Fantastic Four movie, Dr. Doom has a malfunction with the speaker function of his mask. So he sounds like Dr. Doom in the Roger Corman Fantastic Four, which is, will forever be the best version of that
which is,
story.
If you thought Bane was difficult to understand, you haven't seen anything, because he really, it is, it does sound like someone speaking into a tin can if you watch that Roger Corman produced Fantastic Four movie. And I agree, Ariel, that's genuinely an entertaining film. I'm not even saying ironically entertaining, because they were clearly so sincere with their approach that it is, it's really charming. Like, it's super low budget. You got to get past that. The effects are not impressive.
And there's a lot of tonal changes.
But it's fun. It's a fun movie. Like, when I first watched it, I was like, this is better than the Fantastic Four films that were coming, like the one that Chris Evans was in, for example. I was like, this is better than that.
Yeah. Yeah. I quite enjoyed it. And not only because half the time I felt like they were about to break into song, even though they didn't.
Yeah, it did feel like it had the musical energy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm very excited for this new phase of Marvel. Like, well done, Marvel. Now I'm excited again. Speaking of, I don't remember if I said this in last week's episode. At one point in time, I thought that the actress who plays Kamala Khan was in Driving Dolls. That's not actually the case. It's an actress from Miracle Workers. So if I said that on the episode, I apologize profusely for confusing them. They have similar eyebrows.
but next up, we got tons of teasers for trailers during the superb owl. And the next one was, I put it in our notes as trailer of the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes of the, because there's just so many of those. But no, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, we got a trailer for it. And you know what, Ariel, this is a series that I've just let slip that I have not watched, even though I've heard lots of folks that I really trust and I often agree with talk about how compelling and exciting these movies are. And when seeing this trailer, I was thinking, man, it might be time for me to finally like go back and start watching these movies, because this trailer looked really good.
Yeah, first of all, I want to say, even though obviously the quality of these movies has improved, when I look at the new overarching path of these Planet of the Apes movies, I feel like I'm watching the same characters throughout. So from the first one to this one, inside my heart, I don't feel like a tonal visual shift, which is really cool, even though obviously the graphics have gotten better in the CGI. I agree. The story looks cool. I'm very excited for this Witcher crossover, because one of the main human characters is Ciri from The Witcher. But even in the articles and the logline I've seen for this trailer, they're like, the director has breathed new life into this franchise. And you're right, it feels really good. Also, wasn't this story done way, way, way back long ago?
Well, I mean, this feels like it's finally catching up to the Planet of the Apes classic films, right? Because the Planet of the Apes films we've received so far were really about how we get to a point. Like, how did the series of events happen that would lead to a planet where apes are the dominant species and humans have been reduced to being essentially from the Stone Age? And so the movies we've seen so far were largely about the ascension of the apes and the gradual decline of humanity. And this is starting to feel like it's almost set the stage for what would happen from those classic films, where we have astronauts coming back to Earth and realizing that something very weird has happened.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm very excited about this. I think I'm going to have to pick up the films. I did watch the very first Planet of the Apes and I liked it. Of the new series, the one with Gollum in it.
Andy Serkis.
Thank you. I had a cold this week, and even though I'm feeling much better, like, I'm still turning all those synapses back on.
And I mean, we all know you're a blonde at heart, so.
That's true.
That was a
That's
terrible true. Joke. I have to deeply apologize for making a terrible stereotypical joke. I don't actually believe that, and I sincerely apologize. It was a dumb one.
Look, people also stereotype me as a redhead, even though it's, you know, not what comes out of my head naturally. Don't tell anybody. but speaking of blondes, we also got a trailer for Wicked.
That's true. And that show has a blonde joke right in the middle of a song or at the beginning of a song. And it's a undeniable blonde joke. Yeah, we got the trailer. What seemed weird to me, Ariel, is that having seen the stage show, knowing that this movie is actually a pair of films and that the story has been broken into two halves, there was an awful lot of imagery that I saw in this trailer that seemed to me like it would most likely belong in the second half of the story, not the first half, which made me wonder, why is it in this trailer? Unless they've decided to go with kind of a non-linear storytelling where they're going to be jumping around in the timeline. I don't know.
Interesting. So I'm going to be completely frank. I've never actually seen Wicked. I've listened to the musical. I did see one TikTok reviewer who hasn't seen it yet, obviously, just watched the trailer, talk about how they hoped that it wasn't going to be the first half in the first movie and the second half in the second movie because the second half of the musical is a slog.
The only reason
you sit through it is because you just got through Defying Gravity.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't have like the energy of the first half. Like all the big energy numbers are in the first half, and the second half is much darker. But it isn't like it's not as fun. So yeah, it would be kind of like, well, you got all your fun moments in your first film, so come watch the really agonizingly slow second film. I mean, we've also both talked about how we don't understand how there's enough material there to do two films. I guess you could argue if you were adapting the original novel, maybe there's two films worth of story there. But this isn't the original novel. This is adapting the musical. Maybe they bring in some elements that are in the novel, but they can't do too much because I'll tell you, the novel and the musical – totally different, both in the storyline and in the tone.
Well, look, if as people know, I am soon going to go watch Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead in Canada, and that is a almost 3-hour play with two intermissions historically, and they made that into one movie.
Yeah.
So if that can be made one movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, but then they made The Hobbit a story that you could read over the course of a couple of nights into three films, two of which I saw on your birthday.
So sorry. Yeah. So sorry.
That's why
I never saw the third.
It's why neither did I. We went for Ariel's birthday twice to go see The Hobbit, two different years. And it was so, the second one was so discouraging. We didn't do it the third time.
Yeah. Well, look, it's just because Star Trek movies weren't coming out on my birthday anymore.
Yeah.
Because it was the Lord of the Rings trilogy and Star Trek that were coming out in December, which was great for me. It was great for me. I loved it. It was a great tradition. And then it fizzled. I'm also going to say for the casting of Wicked, I am sure everyone's going to do a great job. They cast a lot of really powerful singers and actors and comedians. I think doing Jeff Goldblum as the wizard is inspired.
Yeah, they've got a lot of performers from the West End who are taking up many of the roles.
Yeah, but and this is not saying that she won't do a phenomenal job. What they showed me of Ariana Grande as Glinda in the trailer does not make me feel like she is embodying the Glinda that I know exists in the musical. She looks so sweet and kind in the trailers of what we see of her that like maybe she's a ditzy, unknowing blonde, but they don't show any of that pep.
Like the mean girl popular one. Yeah. Like the character who is really picking on Elphaba for like the first 40 minutes of the play. Yeah.
She seems anti-Heather.
Yeah, I was not blown away by what I saw of Ariana Grande either. It didn't, like, I was giving her the benefit of the doubt because I know she's wanted to play this role forever. She even incorporated some of the song Popular into one of her songs that she did with Mika, you know, the one who did the, you know, I could be brown, I could be blue, that whole, yeah. You know, she did a song with him where they incorporated some of Popular into it. So I knew that she had this long standing love of the musical and a desire to play the part. But again, based on what I saw, I was not impressed. Now, we should also remind ourselves and everybody else that a performer's performance in a film is a collaborative effort, because the director and the editor also play a big part in what we end up seeing. So this isn't to suggest that she's a bad performer. I know she's not. She's done tons of acting before she became big as a singer. She was doing acting. So I don't want to suggest that she couldn't do the part, but I was not impressed with what I saw.
Yeah. And that isn't even saying that she isn't going to do the part brilliantly. It's just the editing of this first trailer.
That's true.
She started on Nickelodeon as like the comedic best friend. After I stopped watching that level of show.
Yeah.
So I kind of missed her Nickelodeon phase. I have gone back and watched clips and she's very, very funny. But again, it seems more of like a sweet, genuine, clueless funny, which could work too. So this is not me. She might do brilliantly. The first trailer just didn't show me that.
Same. Something else we saw, this trailer really sucked people up into the air. We saw a trailer for Twisters, the sequel to the classic Helen Hunt vehicle, Twister. Like, Cary Elwes was in that movie. You know, there were a lot of people who were,
was he?
You know. Oh, geez. Was it Philip Seymour Hoffman, I think, was in it, too. I haven't watched Twister in a very long time. It has been years.
You remember a lot more than I. And I saw Twister at a drive-in with the original Jumanji. While a thunderstorm in a convertible, while a thunderstorm was brewing in the background.
Wow.
So you, that's my memory of Twister. So you had, I've seen it a few times.
You had like the 4D experience, like you would get at an amusement park.
Which I've also done the Twister ride at Universal.
Which I have not done.
A couple of times, less scary there than it was at the drive-in. But I remember very little of the movie. I remember someone tying themselves to a drainage pipe so they wouldn't get sucked away. But it looks like Twister.
I was gonna say the same thing.
It looks like Twister, but with two.
Yeah, and with, you know, obviously updated effects and stuff. There appears to be a plot about potentially deploying a technology that, if it works properly, could diffuse a tornado so that it would disperse and no longer wreak havoc. I don't know if the tornadoes in this movie are going to appear to be somewhat
sentient.
Yeah. Because I was getting that feeling in the trailer, right? Like, not that they were going to be called out as sentient, but because of the behavior of the storm, that you start to question, like, well, how would this work unless the storm was actively going after someone? A la The Day After Tomorrow, where you had the cold front chasing people down roadways and stuff. Like, it was starting to feel like there was a little anthropomorphism going on in the trailer to me. But again, I could be reading way too much into this.
I'll have to ask my niece, who is very into, wants to be a meteorologist, if she's, and recently took training to be a storm tracker, like for the National Weather Service. Like, you can be like an on the ground citizen storm reporter. You see something brewing. Like, if that's something, like, it could just be completely coincidental.
Sure. But if it keeps happening throughout the movie, then you start to question things, right? But anyway, it feels to me kind of like a film that belongs in the 90s. Like, it has a lot of the elements I would associate with disaster movies that came out in the 1990s, just like, you know, Roadhouse. We're getting the reboot of Roadhouse, and you're like, and you're thinking, is this just another mark of nostalgia where you start looking at properties that broke through like 30 years ago, and now we're going to do them again, but with maybe hopefully a better script and improved special effects.
Yeah. I mean, this, like, Lisa Frankenstein is, well, it's an original story, but it's based off of like the 80s stuff. I wonder, we don't need a bunch of that, but I understand why people want to refresh properties for newer audiences. I do think that the Twister franchise really missed the mark when they didn't call this new movie Twisted Sisters.
Yeah.
Or Twister's Sister.
I guess they're not going to take it anymore. And what we're going to take next is another trailer. And this one is turning the damsel in distress metaphor on its head. And it's called Damsel.
Yes, and it we've talked about it before, but there's a new trailer that just shows a little bit more of Millie Bobby Brown being super badass.
While trying desperately to avoid turning into a shish kebab.
Yeah, so if you didn't hear us talk about it before, it's a Netflix movie that's coming out very soon about this girl who... it looks like from the second trailer, her father betroths her to a prince because the village or the family needs it or whatnot. And she goes to marry the prince and they get her all ready. And they're like, we're going to do this marriage ritual. And they throw her into a pit, which contains a dragon that they've done every so often to princesses to maintain the safety of their village, which is not a new trope, right?
Right. Yeah. This is the plot to a 1980s era fantasy film called Dragon Slayer, where the story is that they hold a lottery every year, and the person whose name is drawn from the lottery is chosen as a sacrifice in order to appease a dragon to not destroy their village year after year. So there's stuff in here that does harken back to other stories, but obviously the big difference here is that the woman chosen to be the victim ends up turning the tables and is not going to go quietly and is not going to take it lightly. Like she feels very strongly that the people who decided to sacrifice her should be held accountable for their decision.
Yeah. I was chatting with my husband about it, and he was feeling like the trailer, and maybe it's because, pardon me, there's not enough time in a trailer, but that the trailer didn't show enough of her like starting off as maybe a more naive person. I'm like, she may not have been. She might have been like the Belle character of the village. And the dad's like, no, you have to marry this prince. We need it. You know? So she might have already been street smart and just doing what she was supposed to. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, the trailer doesn't show us all that, but then that's not the trailer's job. I think it looks like it could be a fairly entertaining film. I mean, even if it's treading ground that we've seen before, especially if you're old like me and you've been around long enough to watch mm-hmm. movies like Dragon Slayer, which I did again just like 2 years ago, then maybe then you'll kind of roll your eyes a little bit. But I think it looks like it's well made, and I'm always in favor of fantasy films that aren't necessarily a spinoff of Game of Thrones.
So you don't think that this is a sequel to Princess Bride, where Princess Buttercup has now grown up to be the evil queen?
I mean, even though it may be played by the same actress, I hope that's not the case. Because if it is the case, then I do expect a nearly dead ancient woman to show up and go, boo, boo, you threw her in the pit.
Although you say that isn't a spinoff of Game of Thrones, there is a moment in the trailer where Robin Wright, as the evil queen, says, you know nothing.
Yeah.
And she goes on to a different sentence, but I expected her to say Jon Snow.
Yeah. Well, so. Something that I don't know if you even watched it, Ariel, because I warned you about it before we went. I saw a trailer for Sasquatch Sunset, which is, it feels almost like a Wes Anderson film about a group of Bigfoot, like a family of Bigfeets. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a comedy, but it's a raunchy comedy somewhat about these Sasquatches. And I've only wanted to put it in here because I was like, wow, this is unusual. And it has to do with Sasquatch, and cryptids can be a source of interest for among the geek community. I don't believe in them, but lots of other people do. But this looks like it's kind of like a weird slice of life sort of comedy featuring these Sasquatches as they are going through their lives. And again, it does have a sort of Wes Anderson sort of feel to it, although there is a very raunchy joke very early on in the trailer that it's one of those moments where like a narrator is speaking a somber and deep thing, and then suddenly it cuts to two Sasquatches attempting to make a third Sasquatch, if you get my drift.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Which honestly, I expected it to be. I felt it was an unnecessary joke. I understand it was why it was there, but also it wasn't as bad as I was anticipating. So
I only put it in there because I was just like, I don't know. This tone is, it immediately struck a bad chord with me because it's not the kind of thing I respond to. Like, funny. That's a really funny gag that you did where you subverted expectations by quickly segueing from this sort of poetic explanation to a very non-poetic moment. But it just reminded me of like raunchy comedies from the early 2000s that I never wanted to see. But the rest of it felt more kind of wistful to me.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also got a large cast of very good actors who are nigh unrecognizable.
Yes, I couldn't tell who any of them were until like
who Riley Keogh was.
Yeah. And when they announce it, you're just like, I mean, maybe it could also be someone else and I would never know.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like one person who is like, okay, I can see it. But there are other people I'm like, no, that's the guy from the Geico commercials. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we got tons of more stuff to get through because so many trailers. Let's talk about the very short but new Shogun trailer. I watched it, thought it looked good, like as in very well made. Like you could tell a lot of money was spent making this thing.
Yes. Did it make you fearful of the things we talked about last week about it being a white savior story?
There was only one shot I saw that seemed to actually have the white character in it, as far as I could tell. So I would say this didn't increase my fears or anything. It didn't assuage them either, because it's such a short trailer that I don't even really have an appreciation of what I saw, apart from, I mean, I expected to see some sort of vaguely medieval Japanese military action.
Yeah. I am surprised that I am the most excited person about this show in my household, but I am. So I will definitely watch it. And if you don't, I will give you reviews on it.
Awesome. I appreciate that. So moving on, because we've got so many of these trailers, we're still got like,
we'll pick it up.
Yeah. We got like a dozen or so to get through. Godzilla X Kong. We got a new trailer for that. Ariel, you are the person on this podcast who absolutely loves monster movies. What was your take on this trailer?
So very, very initially, I was like, why is this coming out? Because it's Godzilla Minus One had such brilliant reviews. Why? But it is completely different. It's a different world. It's not in the same thing. The Godzilla versus Kong was so dumb. It was fun. They were fun moments. I loved seeing fighter jets being thrown like darts, but it was a dumb movie. This one feels equally kind of dumb, but I'm also like vaguely into it. I do like the concept of this deaf girl being able to communicate with Kong. I think that's great. She was great in the last movie. I'm sure she's gonna be wonderful in this movie. The fact that they give him like a mecha fist,
yeah, he becomes Cyber Kong.
He becomes Cyber Kong is ridiculous. I worry about there being some like Son of Kong tropes in there because they show young like apes and stuff, but this does because this movie features Godzilla and King Kong fighting together against the evil, and it also has Dan Stevens, who I love from Downton Abbey and Legion and a bunch of other stuff. it leads me to hope that the next one will be a Lethal Weapon style Godzilla Kong buddy cop movie. Mm.
I watched this and I thought, this looks like a chaotic mess and I'm not going to see it.
I mean, I will probably watch it at home.
I mean, this feels like if you're going to watch it, it feels like you kind of should go to the theater because it's a big spectacle movie. Yeah. But I'm not a fan of spectacle anymore. Like, I need more than spectacle to bring me to the theater. Mm-hmm. Like, I get people who say, oh, it's incredible filmmaking. Like, it's so in your face or whatever. They make such good use of it. But for me, I need a really good story. I don't care about the spectacles. I mean, the spectacle might be like, I was impressed, but I'm not going to talk about it later. It just doesn't stick with me.
You didn't watch Pacific Rim either, did you?
I actually tried to. I literally tried to because I noticed that was on one of the streaming services. I can't remember which one, but I was going through and I started watching it and I got maybe half an hour into it. I got into the point where the young woman is chosen to be his partner and then is summarily chosen to not be his partner. And then I turned it off and I did not turn it back on. So it didn't do much for me.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it, but Ron Perlman and Charlie Day really were like the shining bits of that movie to me.
Charlie Day was the most entertaining part that I saw.
But it seems like a similar level of story. I can get behind just spectacle. I wish the story had a little bit more for me to hold on to, but maybe it will.
Yeah.
And now
some horror movies, but they're not at the end of the episode this time.
Yep. That's good.
I did group them all together, but I didn't put them at
you
the
did.
End.
And you sandwiched. This is not me giving you crap for this at all, but you did sandwich the one that was most acceptable to me between the other two that are like my severe icks.
Well, Ariel doesn't like apparently cannibalism or spiders. So our first one is called Cold Meat, which I said cold meat for all your Wendigo horror film needs, because it's a story that appears to have like a couple of people get caught in the middle of like a frozen wasteland where they're driving and then they get run off a road and they're not able to extract their car from the snowbank they run into, and they're not able to like continuously run the car, and meanwhile there's this incredibly cold storm hitting outside. There's also some interpersonal drama moments, there's some like violent people moments in there, and the narrator talks about this whole legend of this spirit that drives someone to consume someone else, which sounds very much like the Wendigo mythology. And I don't know, the trailer looks like it's an intense one. It does fall into that genre of person is stuck in frozen place without any real shelter. Like, it reminds me of Gray. It reminds me of, there's a couple of these that I've seen and their names are escaping me, but it falls into that kind of category. I don't know if it's going to stand out, but the reviews that they cite on the trailer, surprise, surprise, are really encouraging, but then they're not likely to show ones of, I was bored to tears, or it made me want to eat my own foot off.
I'm glad there's not that one, but it did look well made. It looked suspenseful.
But I did watch. But it's not the one that was most acceptable to Ariel. For that, we have to go to a movie that is inspired by the Pied Piper of Hamelin.
Yeah, it's called The Piper, and it's about this. It's about Julian Sands being a crazy evil composer, and when he passes, one of his students takes over his work and finishes his musical score, and when you play it, you go mad.
Yeah. And so, first of all, RIP to the late, great Julian Sands. He's the actor we lost last year. He got lost while hiking, very tragic into his life. But he is someone you would recognize because he's been in so many different movies. And when I saw him in this trailer, I thought, oh, I didn't even know there was another project that had him in it that had not yet released here in the States. I thought this trailer looked like it was trying real hard, but it didn't do much for me. Like, I understand where it's going mm-hmm. from. Like, I can, again, like, you start to, if you watch enough horror movies, you start to see kind of broad categories that horror movies can fall into, like subcategories of horror. And this one feels like a certain subcategory that I've seen a lot of, and very few of those movies in that subcategory ever rise to above mediocre. But maybe The Piper is one of the ones that does it. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Something that only Jonathan will wait to see is the movie Sting.
Come on, this is like a horror comedy. You'd love it.
I tried to watch his trailer, and the first time they showed a spider on somebody, I went, I can't.
Oh, wow. So you didn't get to see the part where the spider crawls into a person's mouth.
No. Oh, ha.
It's a big one, too. A big spider that is, not a big mouth. I mean, it's a sizable spider. So this is like a horror comedy. Like, there's definitely some comedic bits in the trailer. It actually gave me arachnophobia vibes. Like, do you remember when we got like spider horror comedies for no reason? We got Arachnophobia and we got Eight-Legged Freaks. Like, that was a thing for a while. Well, this feels like it's, again, tapping back into that nostalgia stuff. It feels like it's tapping into that. And while there's no one who stood out as overtly comedic as the John Goodman character in Arachnophobia, there did still feel like there's some comedy when Sting. So the basic premise is that a young girl ends up capturing a spider and puts it in a jar and befriends it and names it Sting, and even teaches it not to whistle. She whistles to it, and then it somehow is able to vocalize and replicate the little tune. But then it grows, and then it gets out, and then your eight-legged terror ensues. And I don't know. I thought I liked the trailer. I don't think it's going to be a great movie, but I think it could be a really entertaining movie if you are not totally creeped out by spiders.
Have I shared why I'm totally creeped out by spiders on this podcast? I feel like I have.
You might have. So Ariel had to audition for a movie, and the casting director was a spider and was really mean to her.
No. I used to work as a janitor, and I had to clean a spider web out of a doorway, and there was like an egg nest. So I took the dustpan and the broom, and I squished it. And it was, I guess, about ready to hatch, because it opened up and hundreds of baby spiders crawled up my arm, and the mom bit me, and it took forever to heal. And it was just, I felt like I was covered in spiders for weeks.
I had the same thing happen to me, but with scorpions. So,
don't like those either.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah. It was in my shoe.
But it does hit close to home, because my best friend, my sister, keeps jumping spiders, which are, they can bite you. They're not going to hurt you. Their teeth are so small, right? I won't touch them. I have learned to love them vicariously through her. I can look at pictures of them without being freaked out, but I'm not going to hold them or touch them or whatever. But they will frequently catch jumping spiders out in the wild. And so this story of a girl catching a spider in the wild and then it turning killer could happen. It could happen to my friends. I don't want that to happen, Jonathan.
Well, let's move on to something that definitely is not going to happen, because neither of us know anyone with superpowers. We also got a trailer for Invincible Season 2, Part 2. They broke the season into two halves with a long hiatus in the middle, and the second half is coming to us soon. And we got a trailer where we got to see a little bit of a hint of stuff that's coming up, including Omni-Man being held accountable by the Vitruvians for his failure to prepare the Earth for conquest. You get to see some stuff that's going on back at Earth with the superhero group. And we get to see what appears to be a funeral for perhaps Invincible himself.
Yeah, which all of that sounds pretty grim, but honestly, this trailer made it seem like the second half was going to be happier than the first half.
Yeah, well,
I don't know why.
We'll have to see, because I mean, it could just be that they took the bits that were the most comedic and left everything else out for us to see. But we've both been watching Invincible. We've both been keeping up with it. So I'm very eager to see how season two plays out. Like, knowing the comic books a little bit, I haven't read the comic books, but I read up on them. There are elements of the story that was told in the comic books that I'm very curious to see if they are touched upon or if they play out in the series.
Yeah, yeah. Something else I'm looking forward to seeing is Disney's limited series. I think it's a limited
it series.
It is. Owaju.
Yes.
Did I say that right?
I don't know. Like, because okay. They don't say it in the trailer. Like, I was wondering, I was trying to find the pronunciation. It's a Nigerian story. It's set in a futuristic Nigeria that's very reminiscent of Wakanda in the Marvel films. It's like, you know, much more advanced technologies. And yeah, it looks like it's an adventure story that mostly follows a young girl who gets wrapped up in some criminal shenanigans only because this crime boss has, I think, a deep interest in her father.
Yeah, yeah. It looks really cute because it looks like Black Panther, but it also looks more like Slice of Life.
Maybe
a little bit.
It also features a robotic lizard that is capable of turning into like one of the Thundercats.
Yeah, yeah, but also the lizard has interest in eating, so maybe it's like a cyborg.
Yeah, maybe it could be a cyborg lizard. I think it looks cute. I like that Disney is trying to tell different kinds of stories now. They obviously had some mixed results with that, but I'm glad to see them trying, even though I'm sure that this comes from a very corporate decision-making process, but the result is still good. I want to see more stories about communities that typically don't get this kind of treatment in mainstream media.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. Something I didn't think I was going to be excited for, but it turns out I'm very excited for, is the X-Men 97 show.
Yes. This is a continuation of the animated series that was on in the 90s, and we got a trailer for the return of this. So it's you know, it's not taking into account any of the X-Men stories from the films or anything. It's literally picking up from the animated series that aired in the 90s. And so we're getting that series. We knew about this because it had been announced already, but now that we've seen the trailer, it really does feel like an updated version of that style of animation.
Yeah, but it still has the charm, enough so that I still have a crush on oh my god, all of a sudden it just left my head.
Scott Summers.
Gambit.
Oh.
Gambit. I have a crush on Gambit, and I loved Jubilee was my favorite, so I was very excited.
Yeah, both of them show very up excited. In the trailer.
Yes, it makes me happy. Lastly, kind of lastly, Xbox and Dune are doing some collaborations. So we talked last week about how people are kind of worried about Xbox being in some trouble, and they've done some stuff to make people believe that.
And everybody's worried about Dune because of the popcorn bucket that I finally saw, and now I understand.
And now you understand. However, Microsoft is doing two things as a Dune collaboration. One is there's a levitating Xbox controller, which I can only imagine is going to get knocked off of people's end tables by so many cats.
Yeah, it's clearly using magnetic levitation in order to have the Xbox sit on a little platform that hovers above a base, a pedestal. Very cool effect. Like, it's something that you like, it makes me think of stuff you would see in like the Sharper Image or whatever, but it's that sort of thing. And they're running a contest actually where you can win one, and I thought about entering it until I saw that in order to enter it, you have to go on Twitter and you have to follow them and retweet something. And I'm like, I quit Twitter ages ago because it turned into a really hateful place, and I don't want to do that. So I got out, and I read the rules just to see if there was an alternative way to enter. As far as I could tell, there's not. And I'm like, nope, I'm not doing the Twitter thing. Don't judge anyone who does. If you want to do it, that's totally cool. It's just, I am not going to.
Yeah. Yeah. The second bit of Dune Microsoft crossover is there's a free expansion for Microsoft Flight Simulator, which I didn't even know still existed.
Oh, yeah.
where you can learn to take off, land, and free fall in an Paul Atreides ornithopter from Dune, the like the dragonfly looking aircraft, before going on a bunch of missions.
And that's you're actually flying over a simulated Arrakis. So the Microsoft Flight Simulator, it has enjoyed a huge resurgence because Microsoft put in so much work to make very realistic simulated models of airports all around the world. So you can learn how to fly different types of aircraft and actually take legitimate flight routes between airports and in real time pilot your craft. So if you wanted to do a flight from Atlanta to Los Angeles, you could do that. And it would look a lot like what it would really look like if you were flying it.
Yeah, but you definitely shouldn't get behind the wheel of a plane after you do that because it can't account for things like wind shear and...
I mean, they simulate it, but it's also, you're not feeling any of the turbulence when you're when you're playing a simulation. Also, you're likely, unless you've spent a lot of money, you're likely not using the realistic controllers and display systems that you would encounter in an aircraft. So you're using, obviously... the simulated versions of that. And anyway, I thought that the Arrakis thing was really cool. It was a neat sort of collaboration, not something that I was expecting. And I watched the video of it and it was neat.
Yeah, I look forward to them adding more stuff like that. That's about it that we have for now. We might be taking another couple weeks of breaks just due to some travel that we're both doing. But if you're wanting geeky stuff during that time, if we aren't able to do episodes those weeks, just giving you a heads up for the next couple of weeks. I told you guys earlier about my friend's game, Shadow City Mysteries, a Clockwork Noir that they're building. Well, now it's on Steam. You can put it on your wish list. And the elevator pitch for it is Shadow City Mysteries, a Clockwork Noir, is a single player third person narrative adventure game that is Blade Runner by way of Lovecraft Country, set in Frank Miller's Sin City with a new game plus twist. It looks really cool. I know the people, I personally know the people who are working on it. They are freaking amazing at game theory, at game rules, at creativity. I've LARPed with them. I tabletop with them. One of them even wrote the class of character that Erika Ishii played on World Beyond Numbers. Like, legit, I am super excited about this game. I normally don't promote stuff, but put it on your wish list because it'll help them if it sounds like something that's interesting to you. So you can look into that while we're away.
Cool.
Yeah. And if you want to reach out to us to talk to us about any of the things that we've talked about or to share any fun geeky news, you can do that. I will still be checking our socials and email while I am traveling. Jonathan, how should they reach out?
You got to throw a princess in a pit that has a dragon in it. And then approximately 12 hours later, I'll show up and ask you what you wanted to know. And then I'm also going to show you a scrap of singed dress, and I'm going to look at you with a lot of serious judgment in my eyes. But it'll work.
It'll work. But if you want to avoid the judgment and you don't want to sacrifice a princess, you can reach out to us on Twitter, X. We are on there, even though Jonathan is not. It's LNC_podcast. You can reach out to us on Threads, Facebook, Instagram at Large Neutron Collider. That's also our Discord handle. You can email us at largeneutronpod@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. Thank you for listening. If we take a break, we can't wait to come back. And until next time, I have been Ariel, spiders are ick, Kasten.
And I have been Jonathan, this princess is extra crispy, Strickland. The Large Neutron Collider was created by Ariel Kasten and produced, edited, published, deleted, undeleted, published again, cursed at, by Jonathan Strickland. Music by Kevin MacLeod of Incomptech.com.